Everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'd like to start off today by asking you to take out a sheet of paper and a pen or pencil for a fun, playful startup exercise. And what I'd like you to do is write, actually write, not type, not on a tablet, not on a computer, write down your full name, your complete email address, and your phone number, starting with the area code or country code, and then sign your name. Easy enough. So just pause the pod here while you do that. All right. Now that you've done that, hold the pen or pencil up in front of you, and I'd like you to take it and put it in the opposite hand. So if you're right-handed, put it in the left hand. If you're left-handed, put it in the right hand and do the same thing again. Write down your full name, your email address, your phone number, and sign your name. And pause the pod while you do that. Now that you've done it, let me ask you some reflection questions. How much time did it take in round one? How much time did it take in round two? Usually when I do this in groups where I have people in front of me, round one is about 20 to 30 seconds. And round two, the opposite hand, is usually 2 to 3 minutes. And I calculated that is sometimes 800% more time. And then compare, how did it feel in round one and how did it feel in round two? Very often people report back saying that round one felt easy and round two felt difficult, nearly impossible, frustrating, awkward. And then another question to think of is when you had the paper and the pen or pencil, you know, how did you know which hand to use to pick it up the first time? And how did it feel to pick it up the second time with the opposite hand? And then the other one is to ask, you know, how's the quality in the first round? Now, sometimes people say great, though I think we get that confused with predictable and easy. Round one is usually quicker, and the handwriting is predictable in the sense if you have nice handwriting, round one is probably very nice. Though if you don't have nice handwriting, round one is probably predictably messy. Now, round two, most people say the quality's not so good. It's not so automatic. And then the other question is, you know, what does this point to and why do I start with this exercise? What it points to is the fact that we all have preferences. And with preferences, there's no right or wrong preference. They're just our preferences. Some people prefer to play basketball with the left hand first or the right hand first, or hockey with the stick on the left hand or the right hand, or baseball. And certain things we do in the kitchen, we prefer the left hand or the right hand. Though preferences are one aspect, and the other thing I'd like to talk about before we get into the theme for today is the difference between preferences and habits. So preferences and habits are distinct aspects of our behavior that play significant roles in shaping our daily lives. So preferences refer to our individual inclinations or likes, which are often influenced by personal taste, personal experience, or values. And these are sometimes conscious choices that we make based on desires and priorities. Though on the other hand, habits involve repeated behaviors that tend to become ingrained in our routines, often occurring automatically without a lot of conscious thought. Well, preferences reflect immediate choices, habits, and or more about the consistency of actions over time. Preferences can be fluid and subject to change because the external factors around us influence us and perspectives evolve. Though in contrast, habits tend to be more stable, and when talking to people I work with, even myself, require intentional effort to modify, turn up or turn down. So as a leader, striking a balance between our preferences and our habits is crucial for our personal development and for the personal development of the people we lead, as well as aligning positive habits with our preferences, which can lead to more fulfilling and purposeful lives. I once heard a good quote: habits are like good bets, easy to get into and not always so easy to get out of. contrary to preferences, which can be good or bad, right or wrong, they serve us or they sometimes don't serve us. So the purpose of the podcast today is to talk about an aspect of our preferences that has an impact on how we lead and learn. Once we understand our preference for learning, we can explore how that impacts how we lead. And behind learning styles, we can also identify some of our own habits, good, bad, right, or wrong, and understand what we need to do more of, less of, or differently, and understand how to get along better with those around us by understanding their initial preferences. Now, there's a link to a wonderful free resource called the Honey and Mumford Learning Style Questionnaire. So I would, first of all, shout out and mega thanks for posting this, the folks at Mint HR. And I'm going to post the link, which is www.mint-hr.com/mumford.html. And let me share their introduction, because I would like you to pause the pod and go off and do the 74 question profile when you get a chance. What they tell us is, this is a questionnaire designed to help you with your preferred learning styles. Over the years, you've probably developed learning habits that help you benefit more some from experience than others. Since you're probably unaware of this, the questionnaire will help pinpoint your learning preferences, so you're in a better position to select learning experiences that suit your style. And the assessment itself involves simply ticking boxes next to statements you agree with. Learning theories will then help you identify learning styles and techniques that are most powerful to you, which will then link to leading styles. And this was developed by researchers Peter Honey and Alan Mumford, who identified four distinct learning styles: activists, theorists, pragmatists, and reflectors. And once you know your learning style, again, you can use it to understand the learning process you go through, though it really helps you understand how you see and live in the world and how you lead. So there's no time limit to take it. Probably takes 10 to 15 minutes if you go straight through it. I will say this: the accuracy of the results depends on how honest you can be or how honest you are, and there is no right or wrong answer. As you look at these series of 74 statements, what you're going to do is look at the statement you agree or disagree with more and check the box. So what I'd like to do is ask you to pause and take the assessment. And because it's a free resource, you may want to take a screenshot or picture at the last screen when it gives you the results. My sense is if you move too far forward after that, you may lose the results, meaning you'd have to go back and do it again. So let's just pause here and let you go off and do that. Now, before we dive into the world of learning and leading styles, let's briefly revisit the four learning styles that Peter Honey and Alan Mumford so very well propose: the activist, pragmatist, reflector, and theorist. And just in one short paragraph, activists, those are hands-on learners who thrive on new experiences and doing things, while pragmatists value practical application and seek immediate relevance to whatever they're doing. Reflectors, they prefer to observe and analyze before taking action. And theorists, they enjoy abstract thinking and using that to form systemic frameworks. Let's talk about the activist learner, which leads us to the activist leader. So it's important to connect the dots between the activist learning style and your leadership. People who prefer, and I'm going to say the word prefer, not you are, I'm not going to put you in boxes, though people who prefer the activist style tend to be leaders who are visionaries and trailblazers. So they embrace change. They will challenge the status quo. And because they're activists, they tend to be quick decision makers. Activist leaders are not usually afraid to take risks, and they will inspire their teams with a sense of urgency. And if you look at an activist, just from the name, they're usually doing something. Thus the term activist. Take it from me. I have a lot of preference for that. Then let's move on to the second one, which is the pragmatist leader and learner. These are people who value real-world application and results. Pragmatist learners and leaders, these are the practical and action-oriented people. They focus on tangible outcomes. They excel at problem-solving, and they're really good at adapting to the ever-changing demands of their environment. They're just looking and asking, okay, what do we do pragmatically right now? And you will hear them say that. We have the reflective leaders and learners. Thoughtful, observant approach. Reflective leaders take time to analyze situations. They learn from experiences. They make informed decisions. And they also foster cultures of introspection with their teams, encourage continuous improvement and adaptability, and lots of reflection. So when you come into a meeting with reflectors, sometimes people aren't saying a lot. They're stopping, pausing, and thinking and reflecting. Then we have the theorists, learners, and leaders. These are the strategic thinkers and planners. These people love to explore concepts, and they're very good at developing models, creating systemic approaches to the challenges they face. And these leaders and learners provide a strong intellectual foundation for their teams and tend to guide their teams with clear vision and what appear very theoretically well thought out strategies. Many years ago, I was working with a colleague, Jennifer from England, and we were doing some series of training seminars for groups of 50 people. I think they were high potential learners from an international organization. And they took the online Honey Mumford and got a fairly in-depth 20-page report so that when they came to the seminar, they knew their first, second, third, fourth preference from highest to lowest. We discussed it a little bit. We refrained from answering too many questions. What we said is we want to do a practical exercise beforehand. And it was a very large venue. We'd asked the venue where we were to give us all the activity material they had and put it in the center of the room. And Jennifer and I made a large X down the middle of this room. We had four quadrants and a big piece of flip chart paper in the four quadrants. We had the activist section, the reflector section, the theorist section, and the pragmatist section. So we told people, go to your dominant preferred style, and people went to them. And what we told them is this huge pile of things in the middle. We had bikes and tricycles and chess and checkers and Pictionary and cards and wine tasting and all sorts of hula hoops and anything you could do an activity in the center of this room in a pile. So what we told them is get together in your group, and there's usually 12 to 15 people in each group. You have 15 minutes to organize a one-minute activity using the material in the room. And the objective of the one-minute activity is to teach the other three groups about your learning style. Okay, so let's just think through what happened in the room. Well, the activists did not even see the PowerPoint presentation. They barely even heard the instructions because they had jumped on bikes and were on dribbling basketballs and playing Pictionary and rolling dice and with the bicycle around the room going, hey, look, Jacques and Mary, I've never been in a bike in a room before like this. And they were off. The second group, the reflectors, they actually just stood there. And Jennifer and I, we would come back to them, though they didn't do anything. Now, the pragmatists were very interesting, but what they did is they used the material similar to the activists, but what they did was created new games. So like a road cone with a tennis ball on top, and then they would attach a string from another game and use a ping pong paddle and a tennis racket to create a new game, and then they would teach it to us. My favorite were the theorists. One of the groups, the theorists took Monopoly and they took a flip chart and they painstakingly read the instructions on the inside box of the Monopoly and they wrote a flow chart of how to play Monopoly using a theoretical approach. And that was very, very interesting, which so embodied their approach. Now, coming back to the reflectors, my colleague Jennifer is not as activist and pragmatist as I am. She probably has more reflector and theorist. We're a very good balance. So we look at the reflectors, and in our first sessions, we thought they didn't understand. So invariably, I'd walk over, and these 12 to 15 people are just kind of standing there and looking around in silence, reflecting. And I said, guys, there's a PowerPoint up there, and let me just repeat the instructions. You got 15 minutes. And they would stop me. They're like, oh, no, we understand. We're just kind of thinking it through. Oh, okay, great. Let us know if you need anything. When the groups came back, it was also interesting to see what happened. After the 15 minutes, we eventually would find the activists and bring them back in. And of course, they had done none of the preparation, though they always wanted to go first, but they weren't ready. And so the theorists would go first, and they explained Monopoly according to the steps and the flowchart and the if-then statements. And if you've ever seen a flowchart of Monopoly, you may not actually want to play it. After that, we had the pragmatists, which taught us a new game using all the material there. And they laughed a lot as we tried to play this game they had invented with very complicated, intricate rules. And the reflectors usually played chess or checkers or cards, activities that didn't require a lot of externalized thinking, talking, and favored reflection. And eventually the activists would do something, would show us how they all rode around in bikes. And afterwards we asked people, did you understand? And they all said yes. So that is a bit of a case study of what you get from all these. What we see is the learning styles offer unique strengths, and effective leaders often possess a blend of these characteristics. Also, successful leaders, they know how to leverage their activist side to inspire change. They know how to use the pragmatist side to implement radical solutions. They know when they need to call upon the reflector side to learn from experiences, and the theorist side to design long-term strategies. One of my training groups recently said, oh, this is PDCA, which is plan, do, check, act. And it is. It's just PDCA. And if you like PDCA, look it up. So each of these learning and leadership styles, whether activist, pragmatist, reflector, theorist, comes with strengths. Though it also comes with pitfalls, potential pitfalls associated with the dominant styles. So what I want to cover now is the potential pitfalls for each of these learning and leading styles. All right, let's talk about activist leaders. One of the pitfalls is impulsiveness. So caution is needed, and take it from me as an activist leader. Activist leaders can be prone to make decisions hastily without thoroughly collecting or considering all the consequences. What's important for them to do is balance their enthusiasm for action with a thoughtful assessment of potential risks, or get people in their teams who have the other learning and leading styles to help them out. The pitfall, the second one, is resistance to reflection. And the caution required is activists may resist taking the time to reflect on past actions, learning from experiences. So to avoid this pitfall, activists need to build in moments of introspection, calm, and calm analysis to ensure continuous improvement, and surround them with people who can reflect and get them to reflect. When I run training seminars and I have periods in the training seminars where people actually have time to journal and write and reflect, I can tell who's activist in the room because after a 2 to 3 minute bit of silence writing, they appear nervous and look at me as if to say, is that it? Whereas other people in the room are still reflecting and thinking and writing. And one of my pitfalls, because of my preference for activism, was I would go chat with people while they were still writing and reflecting. One of the groups said, Robert, now that we've done the four learning and leading styles, we see your activism, and it would be helpful for us if you didn't come chat with us, because you may think we're done, though we're not. So what I do now is I play calm, reflective, almost like massage music in the room. A lot of people think I play it for the group so they can think and reflect. It's actually for me more than them, because it keeps me in a zen, chill state where I don't get in people's hair. All right, so let's talk about pragmatist leaders. Their pitfall is the overemphasis on short-term results. Pragmatist leaders, they're really effective at delivering immediate outcomes, though they need to be cautious to not sacrifice long-term goals for short-term gains. Balancing practicality with strategic vision is key. My second learning style preference is activist and then pragmatist, so take it from me that I've been through this. Another pitfall is resistance to change. So pragmatists might be uncomfortable with uncertainty and change, and so it's important for them to recognize when flexibility is necessary and to embrace innovation rather than sticking solely to familiar approaches that feel right pragmatically. Let's talk about our friends, the reflective learners and leaders. The pitfall here is, and it's so well put by Honey and Mumford, analysis to paralysis. So the caution where is needed for reflectors is, in their pursuit of careful analysis, sometimes they hesitate to make decisions. And what they need to do is be mindful of not getting stuck in a perpetual state of reflection, ensuring that action follows through thoughtful consideration. So what reflectors therefore need is more activists and potentially pragmatists to push them along. Now, another potential pitfall, and you know, I'm not saying this always happens, is a potential avoidance of conflict. And where caution's needed is because reflectors may prioritize harmony over confrontation, and conflict avoidance can maintain positive team cultures, though it's crucial for reflective learners and leaders to address conflicts constructively rather than allowing them to fester and remain under the water, because one day they will explode and you have Vesuvio, the volcano, which explodes. Let's talk about the theorist learners and leaders. Number one pitfall is over-reliance on theory. And the caution required is they may be inclined to get lost in abstract concepts or models or not believe you because they want you to prove it with data. So it's essential for these kind of learners and leaders to ground their ideas in very practical applications, ensure that their theories are relevant and applicable in real-world scenarios, and get the other three styles to pry them out of their deep preference for theory if they're doing too much of it. And then there's another pitfall, and that is a potential lack of adaptability. And so caution needed is that theorists can resist change because it requires them to change established theoretical frameworks. To avoid becoming rigid, they should be open to adjusting their theories based on new information and evolving circumstances. As I round out this podcast, here are some reflective questions for everybody. If you've taken the profile, that's great. The Honey Mumford Learning Style Questionnaire is designed to identify your preference for these styles and your lowest preferences for the styles. So consider these questions. First of all, what's your dominant learning and leading style? And reflect on the results to identify whether you exhibit a preference of one of the four or a combination of activist, reflector, theorist, or pragmatists. Once you know your dominant style, then ask yourself the question, how does this style influence my approach to new tasks, challenges, or stressful situations? This is where the best or the worst of us can come out. Consider how this dominant preference, learning, and leading style shapes your behavior, shapes your decision-making in various situations. And then think, you know, where are the situations where this style serves you the best? And then tell your team and stakeholders around you. Identify instances where your preferred learning style enhances your ability to understand, engage, or contribute effectively. And then on the flip side, where might these styles pose challenges or limitations? For example, for me, I don't have enough preference for theoretical learning. I don't have enough preference for reflective learning and leading. So I need to give permission to those around me to remind me when I don't do enough of it, like the group that told me I was too interventionist. Explore situations where your learning style might hinder your learning or hinder your collaboration with others. And then consider, you know, how can you adapt? How can you leverage your learning style in leadership roles? knowing the flip side. And then evaluate your learning and leading preferences so they align with your leadership responsibilities and really how they can help you, be an advantage for you in guiding and inspiring others so they can become motivated. Our next question is, what strategies can you employ to accommodate other learning styles in a team? For example, when I'm an activist leading a team with a lot of theorists and reflectors, I need to change my interaction style with them. And I need to give them the data and let them think it through and give them time to do it. If I use an activist style with them, they won't necessarily like that. Think, how can you adapt your communication interaction with them? Make a habit of, you know, regularly reflecting on your learning experiences. Ask people for feedback and adjust how you interact with other people to facilitate continuous improvement for yourself and your team. So reflecting on these questions should help you gain insight into your learning styles and your leading style for personal and professional growth. Remember that the learning styles aren't fixed and be aware of them. It'll allow you to adapt and develop a more versatile approach to the way you lead and learn. And with that, I would conclude today's podcast and encourage you to share your thoughts and considerations, how this helps you. I'd love to hear your questions, comments, and discoveries. And with this, be leader-like in everything you do, be it activist, reflector, pragmatist, or theorist.